Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and my biggest celebrity crushes forever are Tegan Quinn and David Hyde Pierce. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I have a really bad habit of developing crushes on coworkers, like far too many in my past.
That's so relatable.
I'm so messy.
You spend a lot of time with them, and you get to see them being competent, and it's just a crush recipe.
Yeah.
I have I have a friend with benefits who used to be my coworker, and we've actually been friends with benefits for like 10 times longer than we were even coworkers at this point, and it's quite lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about crushes today. Last week we were talking about new relationship energy and kind of realized slash noticed that like crushes are sort of an adjacent topic but not really the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into it. We're both having a lot of crushy feels recently and also like throughout the course of our lives, although mostly me. I am the crushier of the two of us if I had to pick one.
Yeah, that's not even a close call. That's
just, yeah. I know. It's fine. Do you remember your first crush?
Yes, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a weird snapshot of a memory of us playing together in the kindergarten classroom. Nothing else, note, I have no idea who this kid was. Like, couldn't tell you a name or what he looked like or whatever, but I remember being like, I like him.
Yeah, interesting. I always like to look back at those early experiences and try to pinpoint, like, what those feelings were, because, like, for a lot of us, it was, like, pre-sexual feelings, but there was still, like, a sense of sparkliness, and it's hard to even, like, isolate what that is exactly.
Yeah, looking back, it stands out as, like, the same way certain memories get kind of crystallized with people that you have a crush on, right? Like, it feels like a significant memory. That's how that mm-hmm. one feels. So, like, little kid me was still like, that was, we had a moment.
Aww,
which is really sweet, yeah.
Baby Bex. I usually say that my first crush was the character Danny from the movie Cats Don't Dance, and he's an animated ginger cat who has musical theater ambitions. So, like, it makes sense that I would be into him. But in terms of, like, human crushes, I think probably one of my first crushes was a boy who I was very close friends with in, like, grade one, grade two, who I later decided to stop being friends with, essentially because, like, I thought it was weird that I was friends with nerdy boys, and I thought it would make more sense and be cooler if I was friends with girls. But now I've kind of circled back around. All my closest friends are nerdy boys, pretty much, so hi. How about your worst or most intense or most annoying crush?
Oh, God. My worst crush would probably be, there have been one or two people that, like, so I don't get crushes super often, and when I do, it's like, oh, I guess I'm just into this person. Like, I think I talked about last week about how it's, like, something that happens to me, not really mm-hmm. that I'm, like, a part of. And I've had those on people where, like, objectively the rest of my brain is like, we do not want to date this person. We would hate them. Like, and, like, the rest of me is like, yeah, but we should fuck them, though. And, like, it's those so are funny, definitely, like, the most annoying.
Yeah, it's funny how that works and how crushes can exist, like, completely independent of any assessment you might make of your potential compatibility yep. with a person. Like, you would think, like, evolutionarily or whatever, it would be adaptive for us to have crushes on people who, like, would make sense in our lives and would be good for us. But that so often is not the case.
Yep. And, like, sometimes it feels, because I get those crush feelings so often, it feels almost wasted. That I'm like, why do you get these feelings? God damn it.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, you were with me through this whole saga, but I had a very intense crush on a male friend for, like, I don't know, a year and a half, mm-hmm. 2 years. And I knew, like, even at the time, I think I knew that he would be a garbage partner for me. Like, I was like, I would get annoyed with him in 5 seconds if he was my boyfriend, but it was just something about the unattainability and, like, the fact that I only saw certain good qualities of his and wasn't subjected to the shittier qualities that I would encounter if I was his girlfriend. It just, like, allowed the crush to fester.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, especially really long-lasting crushes like that, kind of become an entity on themselves beyond just, like, the person. The mm-hmm. fantasy of the crush and of the dating them kind of supplements what you actually know about them.
Yes. That is very dangerous for me, and that's something that I've had to become aware of through, like, a lot of therapy and journaling, because, like, it is actually, like, can be really emotionally dangerous for me and can lead mm-hmm. me into some dark places. And, like, I've been reflecting recently, not to get too dark here, but, like, I've been thinking about how, like, being a chronically depressed person, there was something sort of emotionally useful for me about having a really long unrequited crush, because it almost, like, gave me, like, a socially sanctioned reason to be so sad all the time. Like, people understand you being sad about that, whereas if I'm just, like, depressed all the time for essentially no reason, like, that's not as understandable to a lot of people. So in some ways, like, that misery became, like, a part of my identity, which is really not good. It's not a good idea to get to that place if you can help it.
Yeah, I try to, generally, my approach and mentality around crushes is that they're, like, a fun extra burst of energy in my life, but I try not to get, mm-hmm. like, really emotionally invested in the outcome. But sometimes that's mm-hmm. really hard. Yeah. And when it does hit, then I'm like, what do I even do with all of this?
Yeah, the emotional investment piece is really difficult. I was going to ask you, like, whether you enjoy crushy feelings, and I think, like, what you just said is really resonates for me too, which is, like, it really depends on how you're picturing and how you're experiencing those feelings and how you're viewing them. Because if you view it as, like, a relationship that could potentially happen, but they're actually unattainable or not into you, like, that can lead you to some really miserable places. But if you're able to just view it as, like, this fun sort of accessory to your life, like, just a fun thing that brightens up your days, then that can be better. Like, I find that really fueling sometimes. It's just a matter of, like, I have to modulate my feelings so I don't cross over into the, like, why don't they love me space, because that's really not helpful for anyone.
Yeah, I think, like, I joked earlier at the top of the show that I have a lot of crushes on coworkers, but I think, and that's because I don't have a life outside of my job, but I think part of that, like, the way you're talking about this, I think part of that is they were just unattainable. It's a bad idea to fuck my coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I haven't done it, but it's a bad idea. And generally, yeah, I avoid it. Which meant I was just allowed to have these, like, this, like, fun, crushy, flirty energy,
mm-hmm.
and not really have to do anything about it, and kind of be okay just living in that fun space.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there are times when it's, you know, frustrating to not be able to do anything about it, but other times where it was just kind of nice to have that without any pressure to do anything with it.
Yeah, I think similarly, some of my most fulfilling and intense and least upsetting crushes in my entire life have been on teachers and professors, because they were unattainable. In many cases, they were married with kids, etc. And I knew that they were unattainable. Like, even if they did want to date me, I would still think it was pretty weird to date my teacher or my professor. So I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't, like, pining for it, but I was still able to enjoy them on a day-to-day basis. Like, I would get really excited to go to their class every week, and it would make me better, you know, in school. And yeah, it's nice when it can be, like, a productive force in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that note, we had a listener question about how to sort of channel NRE or crushy energy into your everyday life as a force for good, or how to sort of stop it from derailing your productivity or your focus and actually, like, make it a positive thing. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, one of the things that I really enjoy doing is I think a lot about whoever is kind of inspiring these crushy feelings, whoever I'm into at that time, and what it is I enjoy about them and what it is I enjoy, like, we enjoy together.
Mm-hmm.
And then focus on, like, bettering those parts of my life and pursuing more of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because then I'm getting all of this, like, fun, crushy feeling because I'm doing something that makes me think of them, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, I'm, like, improving my life.
Yes.
And also, when I have a new crush on someone, there's also that opportunity to, like, all right, well, where... How is my dating life looking, and, like, what's in working order? What can I address for the perspective of maybe dating this person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to look at it. I read this book a while ago called Unrequited. I probably read it, like, at the height of that crush I was talking about, because I was really looking for anything and everything that could give me some kind of relief or answers. And it's kind of a deep dive into the psychology of unrequited love. And one of the things that the author says at one point is, like, often when we become obsessed with someone in this way, it's because they have something or they give us something that we feel like is missing from our lives or from ourselves. And the more that I thought about that and kind of meditated on that, the more I realized how true that was for me. Like, the person I was really obsessed with was, like, very funny, very gregarious, very, like, social, creative, successful, a lot of things that I really wanted for myself and felt like were not attainable mm-hmm. for myself. And so, like, every time he kind of swept into my life for an interlude, like, I felt very, like, lifted up by that and very excited by that, and then he would go and I was sort of like back to my regular life. And it was like, how can I make my regular life more like my life is when he's in it? Because I think that that is a big part of the answer to, like, how to fix these feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find, like, thinking back on the people I've had crushes on in different times, a lot of times they had a lot of traits I was trying to bring out more of in myself anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what drew me to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's just, I find crush energy fuels my self-development a lot. It's yeah. Like, I mean, that's also that submissive energy though.
Yep, totally.
How do I make myself good and better for them?
Have you ever heard of service kink? Yeah, I mean, on that note, I think, like, crushes, because they're one of the most motivating forces in my life, sometimes they make me do things that are, like, braver than I would ever ordinarily do. Like, I go to more events because I think I might see this person there, or I go up to them after a show that they're in and tell them how great they were, or I just, like, am braver usually than I would typically be because it's such a strong motivating force. And so when I do stuff like that, it sort of stretches me as a person and shows me, like, I can do these things, and maybe then I'll start to do them in other areas of my life too, and, like, realize I'm actually a really brave and strong person in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, shit, I just do more and, like, lead a more interesting life because I'm like, oh, this will give me more things to talk to them about.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, when you're depressed or when you're introverted or when you're shy, like, all of these things that can sort of, like, inhibit what you're able to do or what you feel able to do, like, any excuse to get outside of that has been really helpful for me. And it doesn't matter, really, if it's, like, kind of a frivolous thing like a crush. Like, it still has concrete results a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like I'm, like, going out and doing shit that I wasn't ever interested in just to, like, prove myself to this person. But yeah, when I'm depressed or feeling lazy or shitty or whatever, and it can be the little thing that can tip the scales. It can be like, all right, I'll do that thing I wanted to do anyway because, mm-hmm. you know, I can talk to them or show them or, you know, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. I've also found crushes helpful in kind of, like, narrowing down my image of what my ideal partners would be like, mm-hmm. because, like, it's very easy to get fixated on a particular person and be like, I can only be with this person, I only want to be with this person, they are the only person like them, and I am obsessed with them and only them forever. But if you, like we were saying, like, kind of isolate the traits that you like about them, like, those traits are not singular to them. Even if it seems in the height of your obsession like they are, like, there are tons of other people out there with those traits. And, like, I found it really helpful to get a greater sense of, like, what kind of person I am interested in and compatible with, and, like, what kind of person I am super not, because I've definitely had crushes, like I said, where it was like, wow, you're really, really cute, but if we dated, I don't think it would go well for either of us. Like, I think we would get very annoyed and angry very quickly.
Yeah.
One more thing about how you can improve your life with a crush, even if it's unrequited. I feel like I've absorbed so much information because it was something that was important to a crush of mine. Like, if they had some interest or hobby that I didn't know much about, that sort of, like, sparkliness that they can hold in your mind can make it really easy for you to absorb info so that you have things to talk to them about, or just because you like to listen to them when they talk about their passions. And so, like, there's mm-hmm. a ton of stuff that I have just picked up because I was into people who were into it, and it's, like, really enriched my life. And also, like, if you find that you have a type and who you tend to be attracted to, then maybe, like, picking up, you know, video game knowledge or woodworking knowledge or whatever it is going to carry through and be helpful to you in your future relationships.
Yeah.
But, okay, a darker side of that question is, like, if you do have a crush on someone who is not interested or is not available or attainable, whatever, like, how do you handle that, or how do you move on from that?
I think this is a better question for you, honestly.
Roasted.
Because I love you dearly, but I'm very rarely distraught by that.
Yeah.
I just... No, I think, honestly, it's because you crush so much more freely than I do,
mm-hmm.
And you kind of let yourself fall into it, where I drag myself kicking and screaming,
mm-hmm.
and either, like, let myself sit in that, like, fun, this isn't going anywhere place,
mm-hmm.
or accept that it's going somewhere once it's already gone. Okay. like it's well over the line, and I'm back here like, oh, hey!
Yeah.
So I don't wind up in that unrequited place super often, mm-hmm. mostly because I'm a stubborn old fuck.
Yeah. I think it is partly, like, an issue of labeling. Like, I, as you said, am, like, much more free and willing to refer to feelings that I have for someone as a crush, and then... Once I do that, I start to notice more nice things about them and pay more attention to them and stuff. And I think, like, maybe if I didn't do that with as many people, maybe it wouldn't happen so much. Whereas, like, you're very hesitant to ever refer to anyone as a crush. Like, it takes a lot for you to get to that place.
All right, folks, so here's the thing. My cat knocked an iron onto me and messed up a whole bunch of this recording. So we lost 20 minutes of Kate being really smart and me nodding encouragingly.
you luckily, said shit, too. Come on.
No, I might have. I'm unclear.
You said some good shit.
Luckily, my cat did not drop an iron on Kate, so we have that side of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just gonna awkwardly edit some of that together, because, like I said, she said some really smart stuff about getting over crushes, and I said a lot of stuff about being bad at feelings that I should address in therapy. So
it's gonna
that's
seem,
the cliff notes. That's everything you missed, folks.
Yeah, it'll seem weird because it'll seem like I'm asking myself questions, which I am then answering. But we're just gonna roll with it. And
you act like that's not a thing you generally do.
In my journal,
I was just gonna say I've seen your journals
in the privacy of my moleskins, not on the show. Anyway, enjoy this weirdness. Yeah, but okay, by that same token of, like, a labeling issue, this sounds really simple, but I have found it helpful to just sort of decide that I'm no longer going to think of or call that person my crush. And when I start to do that, like, I start to notice more of their flaws and stuff. And I'll link also to a blog post I wrote, which is about how to get over someone, which is something I've had to do many times. And I think that there is some truth to the sort of oft-repeated saying that time heals all wounds. It does take time. It's not instantaneous. There's no magic spell you can do to... I mean, some people would argue with me about that, the witchy folks. But some helpful things for me have been, like, getting rid of anything that I was clinging on to from the person. Like, do you recall a certain story about a dime? Should I tell this one on the show? Are we doing this? Okay, so the aforementioned boy who I was into way too much for way too long, at one point we hooked up in my room and a dime fell out of his pants and fell onto my bedroom floor and he left and I noticed it the next morning and I was kind of like smiling and I was like, that's kind of cute. Like I still have this souvenir of him. And I left it there. I just didn't pick it up and I would have friends over and some of them would be like, what's up with this dime? And I'd be like, oh, it's just, you know, I leave it there because it reminds me of someone and it's just nice and I'll move it when it doesn't make me happy anymore. And then it went on for like, I want to say maybe a year. it was just part of the landscape of my room. And like, the silly thing about this is, like, it's not only, the object is not the main thing that's important here, is, like, this, it's the symbolism of the object and the sort of, like, mental energy that goes into the object, because, like it or not, every time I look at that object, I would think about that person, and I would think about my feelings for him, and, like, you just, like, get mired in this cycle, this, like, self-fulfilling cycle of crushy feelings. And so I remember, like, there was a day when I decided, I was like, enough is enough. I need to get over this person. It's never going to happen. I just got to move the fuck on. And I picked up the dime and put it in my wallet. And I texted you and told you I picked up the dime today. And then we started talking about, like, what can I spend that dime on? Like, maybe I can go get some ice cream and just throw that dime in that pile of stuff just as, like, a self-care treat. Or maybe I can buy myself, you know, a new journal or, like, some nice thing. And so, like, it was this symbolic gesture that was, like, really more than symbolic because, like, encountering these thought patterns over and over again every day, like, has actual effects on your brain and on how you feel and experience things. And, like, I really needed to fucking do that. Another thing I found helpful, this is, like, advice often given to people who are sort of lovelorn. It's just, like, live your fucking life. Like, go out and do shit, make new friends, try new things, go to shows, go to parties. Like, just get out there and live your sexy, dorky life, like we say at the end of every fucking episode of this show. Because, like, I spent a lot of time when I was deep in unrequited love being like, not only do I not want to or don't feel like doing those things, but I also don't think that they would help because I would just be very stuck in that place. It can be like depression in that way where like your internal logic just tells you nothing will fucking help and there's no point and, you know, it's just self-defeating. But if you actually like get out and do shit, like you will meet new people, you will take your mind off the person over time, like it sucks at first, but it does get easier and it does help. Yeah. Yeah, I found CBT helpful too. Cognitive behavioral therapy, not cock and ball torture, although who can say really? Yeah, because like for me, so much of unrequited love exists in this place of like poisonous logic that doesn't actually make sense, where it's like, I'm not only sad because I can't date this person, I'm sad because I think that not being able to date this person means I'm chronically unlovable, I'll never find someone to love me, I'm undesirable, I'm unsexy, you know, I kind of see myself through their eyes, and if they are not viewing me so flatteringly, it's really easy to absorb all of that shit. So I use kind of a CBT framework sometimes to be like, okay, I feel like I'm unlovable, but where is the proof for that and where is the proof against that? And there's usually a lot of proof against it. All right, I'm interested to know your take on this because you are a flirting pro and I consider you one of the most socially intelligent people I know. How do you decide if or when or how to tell a crush that they're your crush? Yeah. Yeah, I'm also a fan of the kind of gratuitous compliments because I think like first of all it demonstrates to them that you're potentially into them, but I find it really useful as like a gauge for their interest because you just watch how they react to you calling them cute or hot or whatever, and that will give you a lot of information. Like obviously it doesn't tell you everything, but it can be a helpful starting point. I've also occasionally found it helpful to sort of mention in the course of conversation, if I can find a way to work it in, like what kind of person I tend to be attracted to or what kind of connections I'm looking for right now and kind of see how they react to that. Because like, you know, if I'm talking to a charismatic nerd and I mention that I'm really into charismatic nerds, they kind of have an opportunity there to be like, oh, really? Like, tell me more. Or to very much not do that. And again, like, their reaction to that is going to give me a lot of information that I can use to make that decision. I want you in my bedroom. Okay, we're back. We're going to answer some listener questions. Some of these are overflows from last week about NRE, and some of them are crushy, but I mean, that's all kind of on the same spectrum of desires and behaviors. First of all, this is a very niche question, but someone wondered who from Brooklyn Nine-Nine we have the biggest crush on. If you don't know that show, it is a cop comedy starring the wonderful Andy Samberg, and we are both pretty obsessed with it. And the person also wonders, if we could not choose the same person, would that change our answers?
Okay, I mean, I think the obvious answer is Jake and Rosa for both of us.
Yes.
And I don't know, I think we'd both be fairly happy with either, so we could just, like, flip a coin and decide between the two of us. It's fine. We could trade on weekends. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, either of those sound great. Threesome with those two sounds great. Yeah. I'm fine either way.
Yeah, exactly.
Glad we could be civil about this, friend. Okay, someone was curious how NRE or crushy feels interact with being bipolar, which we are both bipolar type 2. We talked about this a little bit last week. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you listen to last week? Because that... I find, whether I'm hypomanic or depressed, it tends to exaggerate whatever crush feelings I'm feeling.
Yes.
They feel so much more dramatic and overwhelming, whether it's tinged with a feeling of hopelessness or tinged with a feeling of, like, obsession and, excitement. They still, it infuses way more emotion into any sort of crush before I really want to be that invested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's not a great feeling for me.
Yeah.
It puts so much more pressure on something completely out of my control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my therapist, when I had one, pointed out to me that folks with mood disorders are more sensitive to a lot of stimuli in their lives, and it can trigger a lot of different mood shifts and everything, more so than it would for a neurotypical person. And I definitely noticed that. Like, if I'm excited about a new crush, I'm, like, really, really, really excited, and it can put me into a manic episode. And if I'm feeling rejected or ignored by a crush, it can be really, really depressing for me, and it can pull me down into a depressive episode. So I have to be aware of those things, and I have to be very aware of, like, the self-care strategies that are helpful for me when I'm trying to assuage those moods and manage them, because, yeah, crushes can be kind of a dangerous playing field for my mental illnesses. Someone wondered how you handle ruts where you go ages without having a new crush, which I think is interesting because a lot of what we've been talking about has been, like, how to manage a crush when you have one. But it's also kind of a problem in its own way when it's been forever since you've had one.
I have a distinct memory of being, like, a preteen and going up to my friends and being like, so I don't have a crush on anyone, so we have to figure this out. And we, like, kind of auditioned all of the boys to, like we didn't tell them, but we just, like, weighed the pros and cons of each one and tried to make, like, a good executive decision on who I would have a crush on next.
So methodical. I love it.
Went great. No indication of the kind of human I am now. None at all. No. But yeah, I don't know. I tend to have these really, like, long-term mellow crushes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always usually someone I can fall back on. I'm like, oh yeah, that dude, I've been into that dude for like 2 years now. He still makes me smile. Mm-hmm. Like,
a fallback. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I you can take these periods of time as an opportunity to sort of look for the good and attractive traits in everyone generally, like, kind of just look around you and see, like, what is crush-worthy about the people who you run into all the time or people who already exist in your life. But if you don't really want to cultivate a crush just for the sake of having a crush, I've found it helpful to consume romantic media where, like, there's lots of people who have crushes on each other. Like, you know, teen shows like The OC and Gossip Girl are great for this, or if that's not your speed, like, The Office is good. Like, Brooklyn.
Riverdale.
Yeah.
Riverdale is wild.
Yeah, anything like that. And if it is a popular media property, like all of those, then you will be able to find fan fiction too. And like me, because I'm mentally ill and tend to be obsessive, if I don't have a crush in real life, I will obsess over these media things. Like, I will get way too into them. Sometimes I write songs about them and shit. But like, I kind of feel like that's better and healthier than focusing that amount of attention on someone who like maybe is not interested and maybe will be freaked out by it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
A listener wondered whether we think it's okay or ethical to flirt with someone who you have a crush on, but you don't really see yourself actually dating them. Like, is that leading them on? Is there a way to be transparent about those feelings without making them feel bad? I don't know.
I think there are degrees to flirting, right? Like I was talking about earlier. I don't think there's any harm in hanging out, like, around the bottom of the staircase, right, and saying, like, playful, bantery things back and forth that are, like, on the cusp of flirting with anyone. Like, flirty behavior, you know, at that low of a degree is playfulness, right? And I think that's one thing versus, like, really intense, deliberate, explicit flirting. That is, like, you know, everything except asking someone out.
Yeah.
Like, that's a dick move, right?
Right.
If you got someone to the point where they think you're gonna ask them out any day now, or something along those lines, that's a dick move. But I think there is room for some playfulness with people that you're friendly with, without it having to mean something.
Yeah, I think also if your reason for not wanting to date them is that you're just not in a good place to be dating in general or whatever, there are ways that you can find ways to mention that in conversation, not directly in reference to them specifically, but to kind of drop that hint so that they manage their expectations. And also, like, it's a super cliche to say to someone, like, I'm not interested because I value our friendship too much and I think we should just stay friends. And, like, a lot of people are sensitive to that because, like, a lot of times that we've heard that, it's maybe been a half truth or, like, in some cases a full out lie, like the person just wasn't into you. But I think that if that is really true, like, that is a wonderful thing to say, as long as you can phrase it, you know, framed by enough compliments and in a supportive way that doesn't seem super rejection-y, then I think that can be okay. Someone wondered how you determine if a new crush is kinky. I actually think we could do, like, probably a whole episode on, like, kink flirting and, like, kinkdar, but do you have any, like, go-to strategies for this?
I'm a loudmouth about being kinky, so I just say shit and see how that goes. I, like, make a joke about something and then just, like, lean over and stare at them. Like, and just, I, well, but, like, for realsies, though, I kind of gauge what their knowledge is, right? I will drop, again, that staircase, right? Relatively subtle kink and kink-adjacent stuff, because also I tend to meet people in spaces that are pretty accepting to sexuality and that kind of stuff, right? I work at a sex tech company. I'm a sex educator. I've worked sex toy retail. I go to queer parties and queer play parties. Like, these are all places where it's totally chill to be talking about sex. But I will make niche comments or jokes, always self-referential, or at least for the most part. Like, a big one that I'll go to is, you know, like, recently I said the sentence, like, you know, yeah, I don't like, you know, I don't like situations where I can't control things. And I was like, says the submissive, and then moved on. And, like, little things like that, and just, like, see what they say. But again, that's a lot more explicit than some people can get. So there are, you know, there are milder ways to, again, drop that kind of jargon and see if they pick it up.
Yeah, alluding to past experiences is a good pretty casual way of doing this. Like, I'll often be like, oh, that reminds me of the time I was spanked in front of a crowd or whatever. Like, and then you just see what their face does. and you can also do the classic move that we recommend a lot, which is like, oh, I had a dream last night where I read an article or I saw this movie, blah, 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 where you're like, it had this kink thing in it. Weird. What do you think about that? And just kind of like, again, watch what their face does and get a read on it.
Yeah. And then for us, DS is a big thing. So, you know, there is subtler stuff you can do that can be fun, but I don't like, and that you see a lot of stuff on Twitter all the time, right? You know, if they do XYZ thing, they're a submissive. And like, I think stuff that vague is not necessarily definitive.
Yeah. So as a sub, like, if someone says anything that can be construed at all as an order, I'll often, like, playfully ask them, is that an order? Or maybe I'll even say, like, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever. And kind of, again, like, read their face, see what happens. If you don't get a great reaction from stuff like that, though, like, back the fuck off, because that can feel really weird to folks if they have not consented to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a difference between, like, very seriously being like, yes, sir, and, like, jokingly exaggerating it and, like, tipping your fake hat and, like, you know, doing the whole thing. And, like, that's generally how I'll start, like, very playfully and see, you know, or even, like, semi-sarcastically, like, all right, yes, dad, you know. And see how that goes.
Yeah, and with my kinks being as they are, I have often found ways to refer to myself as a cute little something in casual conversation and see what that does, because there is a certain type of dominant person who responds very well to that.
Yeah.
One last question. I think this is an interesting one and one that's relevant to a lot of people. A listener is wondering how to get back a sense of NRE or of crushiness when you're in a long-term relationship.
I would say that NRE is the infatuation with newness, right? Something's new and exciting. So I would explore what kind of new things you can do together. Also, like, it's kind of a trope, but the idea of dating each other again. Like, what was it that, what was exciting about the beginning of your relationship, right? Take deliberate time to spend time together. Ask each other the kind of questions that you ask someone you don't already know. All of the things you kind of assumed you knew about them. Dig deeper and explore that kind of stuff.
Yeah. There's a writer, Esther Perel, who has a great book called Mating in Captivity, which is kind of about this very concept of like staying interested in and attracted to a partner even in a long-term dynamic. I think she also has a podcast. One thing that I've found helpful is like continually trying new and exciting things together, like pushing yourselves out of your comfort zone, because yeah, like you create that sense of newness and of novelty and of excitement. And it also helps you see different sides of your partner that maybe you haven't seen in a while because you've become sort of habituated. So you get to see, you know, maybe what they're like when they're at a swing dancing class or when they're at a Scrabble competition or whatever. Like you're just going to see different facets of this person you love.
Yeah, and you've told this story on the podcast recently, probably, but I know you had a lot of fun with that, like, strangers in a bar roleplay thing.
Yes, my partner and I did a roleplay where we pretended that we were meeting up in public for the first time, and I was interviewing him for a story I was writing. And I think that there's a lot of different ways you can play with that type of roleplay. Like, you can pretend you're Tinder strangers on a first date, or you can pretend that you are both just, you happen to be at this bar, and then you strike up a conversation and start talking. And that, again, lets you see a different side of your partner than you would typically get to. And it also brings you back to a place where flirting and double entendres and all of that is a thing, which can be very exciting and can lead to very good sex. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Dildorks. We have crushes on all of you. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. I just hit 10,000 Twitter followers this week. I'm stoked as hell.
Woo! I still can't woo. Testosterone, goddammit.
Where's your stuff, pal?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together, we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TheDildorks and at TheDildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast player. While you're there, rate and review us. It makes us easier to find for other folks. And if you want to support us even more, you can go to Patreon.com/TheDildorks. Toss a couple of bucks our way. Help me pay my phone bill. It'll be great.
Thanks. Thank you to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, you made it work.
Yeah. Okay,
Are you recording?
Yeah, I started, 2 minutes ago.
Okay, same.
Okay. I love that we know what part of the conversation is bloops and we start recording. Well, it's like, this sounds like it might have some bloop-worthy content.
We've been doing this a long time. We know what's up.
Yeah, we have. Oh, you're back. You were breaking up a bunch. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, why are you staring at me smiling? It's pretty weird. What?
Great, this is going to be a trip. I'm so excited. Hang on, my cat is trying to eat her own puke.
I wondered what was distracting you so much.
I'm like, no, I can't allow this. I can't abide this. Usually I let her do whatever the fuck she wants while we're recording, but this I cannot do. Let me take this again, because as I'm talking, I'm realizing what I mean. I was making my way through that sentence, and I'm like, deep revelations about myself. Great.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, learned it, now I'm going to share it on the podcast.
So real. Our show's like therapy. I love it.
There's always 5 months in where I'm like sitting on the couch next to my roommate and I'm like, I think I like them. And they're like, yeah, I know. You've been talking. Fuck out! What the fuck? My cat just dropped an iron on me. Fuck! Why are you such an ass?
Until next time. Oh my god, I forgot what the thing was. Okay, I got it now.
Sexy dorky life, you said it earlier.
I know, my mouth was like, what is this again?